don't strive for that because you'll never get there.
Mm.
So the goal isn't really balance, maybe. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I just want to find the right level of risk that is not putting my family into danger, not putting me into a super stressful place where I'm losing sleep every night.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their family. So today, we're speaking with my good friend Darren. He has a wife and two young boys. And he's going to share with us some of the things he's doing in his family to make a positive impact in the world. So I thought we could start. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that poem or not that I sent. Did you?
Yeah, but I didn't have the... Again, I had a child's...
Yeah, you were in the middle of something. No, you're good.
So
let me see if I can...
I did my best. But basically, the context is a bridge. There's an older man building a bridge.
Yeah.
Across, like, in order for younger people to kind of follow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he builds a bridge and he goes across the other side and there's another guy over there and he says, why are you building the bridge? You already crossed. Why would you waste your time doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm not building the bridge for myself. I'm building the bridge for my son, in his case, who comes after me.
Yeah.
So there's...
Here's what's interesting about that, though. He had a hard time crossing this thing in order to build the bridge.
He did.
Which made him probably a stronger person.
Mm.
But now he's making it easier for his son?
He is, yeah.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Should his son be...
Should it be easier for him?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's probably the thing that made the father, or the older man, I guess I'm not sure if that's a father or just... It's what built his character, was going through this hard thing.
And maybe the hard thing was the only thing that made him actually build the bridge in the first place.
Yeah. So is it our job as dads and parents in general to
make it easier?
Make our kids' lives easier than our lives?
This is a good question.
I think it's one of those things that it's like, my life was a bit challenging growing up. We didn't have a lot of financial, we didn't do a lot of trips. We never had much money. And it was always kind of by the skin of our teeth to get to make ends meet. That's why it's two different metaphors I use there, two different cliches.
Yeah.
But, I saw my parents, wrestle with that, and we made sacrifices, and I was content. And my kids have it a lot easier because we have a little bit more financial success than when I was growing up.
Mm.
And I worry sometimes that...
It's not a good thing.
They're being spoiled more than, I want to give them experiences and all these things like that. But it's a lot easier for them. Mm. And they demand a little bit more because we can do a lot.
Mm. Maybe the poem, maybe instead of thinking about it being for ease, maybe it's more for pathway, direction.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much to make life easier, but to make the purpose and direction of life more clear.
Yeah.
So the man who has to then go down into the river and wade through the river for a long time takes him longer to get to the other side, whereas someone who's shown a clear path on how to get across or given a clear path on how to get across, maybe they actually kind of get on with their life sooner. So maybe it's a story more of coming of age or growing into manhood than it is a story of ease.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Because I think you're right about something. I think when we think about making our children's life easier, we hear it all the time, right? The idea of, I want to give my children the things that I never had. And that means a lot of things to a lot of people. But a lot of times what that means is I want them to have more stuff, more presents, more toys, more fun. And I'm not sure if that's the right direction. That seems a little off. Not wrong necessarily, but I don't know if that's helpful.
Sure.
For someone to grow into manhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine there's a point A and a point B and it's a bunch of woods in between that. And that father's job was he had to get from A to B through those woods.
Mm-hmm.
And he simply cleared a path through a lot of, and it was really hard to do. He's not necessarily making it incredibly easy. The kid still has to go through those woods.
He does.
There's still a lot of perils that are gonna attack, but he's helped lay a route that will ensure a little bit more success. So maybe that's what, yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of what.
Yeah, maybe. It's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it makes thought-provoking, at least.
Yeah.
I seem to tear up at the end of that poem almost every time I read it.
Mm.
And I don't know what it is. I think maybe it's because of the longing for someone to have shown me
mm-hmm.
how to get to manhood. And maybe the lack thereof of someone showing me what that path looks like.
Yeah.
And then going, yes, this is the right direction.
You didn't have that?
No, I don't think so. I think I had a dad who did the best he could.
Okay.
But I don't think he knew himself how to teach a clear pathway to get there. It was sort of like a figure it out
that feels
kind of approach.
That feels like that's kind of the norm for that period of time.
Yeah, just figure it out. You'll figure it out.
Good luck. I feel like almost everybody I know, that was their experience. I feel like it's very rare to find like this intentionality in that.
Yeah.
My neighbor was telling me recently how he's like, he wished there was a rite of passage in his life. He asked his father for that, and his dad still couldn't do it. And his dad was a pastor.
Mm.
And he was like, I wanted that so desperately, and I still long for that as an adult that I regret it. So I wanted to do that for my son.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, imagine being a father whose kid says that to you and you don't even know how to do it.
Right.
And you are a shepherd.
Of people.
Of people.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Of people outside the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which he was probably good at that.
He was probably, yeah.
Good inside his own doors.
Yeah. And I would probably say that's similar to my dad. My dad was a good leader outside the family. I think he struggled to know what to do.
Yeah.
In his closest relationship.
Sure, I get that.
So, well, tell us a little bit about your family.
So I have a wife, Lindsay, who we've been married for 17 years this coming May. We have a son that's 12, Tovin, and who's on the cusp of manhood. Of
teenage years, yeah.
13 is coming soon. And another son, Bennett, who's 10 years old.
Mm.
And we have a dog that's really obnoxious. Is that
your point? Your dog tried to hug me today.
Your dog.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah, yeah, almost. yeah, and, you know, as far as extending from that, my dad passed away about a year and a half ago at 83, I think, or 82. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My mom is still here with us, and I connect with her some quite a bit. I'm doing my best too.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I have a sister.
That's awesome.
That's my family and then my extended family.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So tell us, I know you are an intentional father at the best of your ability. What are 1 to 3 things that you do that you feel like have been a positive impact on your family?
You just used the word intentional, and I feel like that's sort of the answer, the first one that I could think of. It's like...
What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So I... I feel like, by the way, I have to preface all of this by saying I feel like I'm really weak at all of this. So
you're learning.
I'm a work in progress, and I have a long way to go. But I think as I get older and as I see my kids getting older, I find myself realizing how unintentional I am in a lot of areas of the relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dating, you're intentional in trying to show... I was trying to show Lindsay how much I cared for her and how much I wanted to be married to her and things like that. So I was very intentional with love notes and dates and all this kind of stuff, right? Then you have kids. The kids are just there. They're in your life, and you have to work a little bit harder to be intentional.
You already have a relationship by default
because
they live with you.
Exactly, exactly. And so I think there's an intentionality of like, okay, I need to be intentional, and I'm not being intentional. I don't think it has to be big expressions of love and intentionality. I think it could be simply like, I'm sitting at my computer when my kids walk in the door from school, and do I just continue to look at the computer and say, hey guys, or do I look up from the computer? Do I set my computer aside and go walk over to the door and give them a hug and say, hey, how was your day? Tell me about it. Tell me one great thing that happened today or something. Mm-hmm. Even spending those 3 minutes doing that just making that connection. That's an intentional thing that I have to really work toward doing. Mm-hmm. And
when you do that, yeah. Well, what does that look like? I mean, you described it a little bit, but give me like a play by play.
Yeah. First of all, I find myself sometimes just falling into my habit of not getting up and just saying, "Oh no, it's fine. They'll be fine.
They're good.
They don't even care. Mm-hmm. They don't even care that I'm would mm-hmm. acknowledge them." Right. So it does take a bit of a no, I'm going to do this whether they like it or not, and whether I feel like I have the time or not. It's something I need to really do. And again, it's probably 50% of the time I'm good at this, and the other 50% I'm bad at it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a matter of just saying, okay, I want there to be consistency in the way that I acknowledge them, and I want to be available to them. If they had a rough day, I want them to be able to like very quickly tell me that, and I can address it and mm-hmm. help them out and encourage them or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. And there's also it's also like eye contact. I think it's David Brooks that wrote How to Know a Person. I believe that's his most recent book.
I'm not sure.
He talks about like paying attention to somebody, like listening to somebody so intently that you're like, you're working up a sweat, but it's a matter of like being really present. And I know that's kind of cliche as well. It's like, it's a cliche thing to say being present because people say that all the time, mm-hmm. but it is, I think it's very true. And being present means like you're using your senses. I think you're really trying to listen. Mm-hmm. You're looking, you're trying to get a feel for like where somebody's at.
Mm. That is interesting. I think in our culture, there seems like there's a lot of distractions to not be present. And yeah. I even just working on a computer, broadly speaking, that you're working in a place that is virtual, that doesn't actually exist in the tangible world. And so when somebody comes in, it is a big transition, I think, to go, mm-hmm. I'm going to take my attention off of this thing where my mind has been invested for hours.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to focus on a real human standing in front of me.
Yeah, that can be hard to do.
I can understand that challenge.
Especially when you feel like, oh, I've got a meeting starting in 20 minutes that I'm still preparing for, and the last thing I have is time to do this. Mm-hmm. But I think over time, your kids will start to notice that,
mm-hmm.
and so, it will be more impactful.
So your boys come home from school,
yeah,
and they walk in the door, and your office, I guess, is somewhere close to the door. You can see them, or
sometimes my office is on the couch because I just have my laptop.
Okay, so you're working on your laptop, and they come in,
yeah,
and then on your best of days, what happens?
I set the laptop down. I walk over to them.
You close it?
Not usually.
You just put it down.
Yeah, I'm not.
And then you walk to them.
Listen, I'm not okay. Yeah. I'm not worried about those ancillary things. I'm more focused in on, like, I just need to give them attention right now, okay. Right? So it could look a little bit different each time.
Okay.
But I do want them to know that I'm here, mm-hmm. that I'm around, mm-hmm. available.
So you walk over to them?
Yeah.
Ideal day.
Yeah. Ideal day, I'd walk over to them. This is very specific.
You give them a hug?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually a side hug for Tobin.
Okay.
He's kind of he's more of like a put his arms down and then you hug him from the side like that. Then it's a little bit more of a huggy kid if he's in a good mood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a variety also of some people are more like that.
Yeah.
In like a kind of shrug. And then some people are like a full on face kiss. So
yeah. Yeah, and sometimes I'm working downstairs in an office, and I'll hear them come in, it's easier to ignore because I can just pretend like I'm not there. Because half the time I'm not at home, we're working, and half the time I am. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't know the difference if I was there or not there.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be like, oh no, I'm going to go let them know that I'm here, mm-hmm. and that I'm around if they need me.
Do you say anything specific, like how are you doing, or how was your day, or do you have any kind of specific questions you're interested in knowing about them?
It's usually just simple like that.
How was your day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, how was the day, guys? Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yeah, fine.
Yes, it's almost always fine. It's almost always a fine day, which is a throwaway word,
good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, no. I've been trying to figure out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, is it? Is that good, interesting, bad, interesting?
I've been trying to figure out how to break through some of that because I feel like we also have some of those habits of how's it going?
Yeah.
It was good. How was your time with your friends? It was great.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so what happened? Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's almost, you got to figure out how to ask open-ended questions, right? Mm. Which is one of those things that you learn from, like, Dale Carnegie.
Right.
Like, don't ask yes or no questions.
Yeah. So that's one example of intentionality. Do you have any others that you can think of off the top of your head of just your, I mean, intentionality is the idea that you're going to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make it a part of your thought process in the day so that then you do certain things that would encourage that end result of developing the relationship with your son. So that's one.
Yeah.
Can you think of another one that you may do and not even realize that you're doing?
Around intentionality?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's also a probably an acknowledgement of things I shouldn't be doing, like being glued to my phone, which is really easy for me to do.
Mm.
And we have like a, gosh, man, it's like, I hate how much we have to say, please don't get on screens, get off the screens now. No, this isn't screen time. This, you know, like, I know that's a battle for a lot of families.
It is.
But then I find myself being on the screen.
Mm.
And even if my screen is work a lot of times.
Sure.
I'm responding to an
emails or texts.
Yes. And I get a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any idea what's on the other side of that screen. It's just to them, it's just a screen in my face.
Mm.
And so I'm trying lately to really be more intentional, like in that word, with putting down the phone, only using it when I really need to use it.
Mm.
It's the nature of our work is constant messages kind of coming in that I need to respond to. It's hospitality in a lot of ways. And so there's guests coming, there's people coming and going, there's emergencies, there's things that need to be addressed. And so I feel like I need to always be kind of tethered to my phone, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
I really need to figure out how to solve that. But the reality is I'm trying my best not to be on my phone unless there is a need, and I will communicate that sometimes. I'm getting better at saying, hey guys, I'm on my phone now because we're having an issue at one of the houses, because we have multiple rental properties.
Mm-hmm.
My son thinks we should just get rid of the rental properties and that would solve it all. He doesn't understand that's why the food is on the table, is because of those rental properties, but that's
one idea.
Yeah. that is an idea. Yeah, so I think that's part of it as well, being intentional with that.
Now, do you have that would be hard to have a shut off time. Like, I don't turn my phone off after this hour if you have people who need things.
My phone's on, and luckily, there's now a watch that I can feel the buzz on my wrist, and I can take myself out of the room to go check what it is to make sure it's something.
Mm.
That I don't have to look at a screen. It just looks like I'm looking at my time, you know? And I honestly got the watch partially for that, so that I could not...
A little more control over the distraction.
Like, this isn't a requirement right now. Mm-hmm. I can, you know...
I can get to it in 10 minutes or...
Yeah, it's ironic that I'm using technology to try to, like, defeat technology a little bit in my life.
Yeah.
So, pro tip.
If you can't,
a watch like this can also, if you wake up early in the morning, the buzz on your wrist doesn't wake up your spouse, and so they're more happy with you waking up in the morning.
That is a good tip.
It's great. No, it's fantastic. There's no sound. It just buzzes my wrist and it wakes me up at 5. If I get up at 5,
yeah,
I can go have some quiet time by myself.
That's good.
Fantastic. Yeah,
that's great.
Well worth the cost of a watch.
marital piece.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you mentioned intentionality is one.
Yeah.
And you talked about the saying hello to your kids when they come home, being intentional about focusing on them, and then also attempting to not allow technology to rule your in-person relationships.
Mm.
What's another item that you feel like you do that you excel at that you feel like impacts your family, or something that you do that you believe all dads should do? That would be a different way to ask the same question.
Yeah, so this is one that I'm kind of wrestling with a lot for myself a little bit. So I'm trying to figure out, like, well, I'm 46, and that means I'm probably about halfway through my life if I live a full healthy life.
80, 90 years.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. The average, whatever. That would be beyond the average, actually. Yeah. So I'm past that middle point. Mm-hmm. And I think like, what am I going to regret? Like, when I'm at that age where I can't do any more work and I can't, like, what am I going to look back and say, I wish I had done this more, you know? I think I'm trying to figure out how to balance, living a simple life, and living a big, bold life.
Mm. Taking risks.
Taking risks. Mm. So, like, what does that look like? You know, part of me leans toward, like, okay, we've got these rental properties. I've got different freelance work that I do as a designer and all these things like that. What if I were just to, like, kind of like sell off all of our assets, you got rid of everything that we had, use that, put that money into a thing and just live a super simple life and just let that money be used until we die. And that's it. I'm like, part of me is like, ooh, that sounds really nice. Because then it's like, I don't have all this stuff on my shoulders that I worry about that keep me up at night, that I wake up at 2 o'clock and, like, say, oh, shoot, how am I going to get this figured out and solved, right? Mm. That's, like, a super simple life. And on the other end of it, I'm like, I want to build up this really amazing business, and I got big ideas to do this, and it's going to cost me, you know, I need to get a big loan, and that big loan is going to come with a big monthly payment to pay off that big loan. Mm. And that scares me. And so what I'm trying to figure out...
And with that comes stress.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But I don't want to, like... I want to teach my kids, and what I want to do in my own life is try to find this, like, balance. And my friend Barry Cahill, you know Barry Cahill? No, he's awesome. He's a guy here in Denton you should interview. He's an amazing dad.
I should. Barrett.
Yes. Bear is a super intentional father that I found, and he gave me a lot of good advice as a father as well. But he's like, there's no such thing as balance. Now, he was talking about... He's like, you're always falling one side or the other. Mm-hmm. Right? Your body is trying to catch yourself from falling the other way. You're never actually balanced. Mm-hmm. And so he was talking about it in relation to, he's a freelance, he does, like, iPhone development, stuff like that. And so he's talking about, like, sometimes you have too much work coming your way and you just feel like, I need less work. And other times you have not enough work and you're like, oh, shoot, I need more work. We're going to have problems with finances. Mm-hmm. There's never a comfortable balance. You're always going to be
just sitting right there where you need what you want, and then
we're like, this is it, this is the time. And so he's like, don't strive for that because you'll never get there. So the goal isn't really balance. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I just want to find the right level of risk that is not putting my family into danger, not putting me into a super stressful place where I'm losing sleep every night. I do want a simple life. I do sometimes envy those people who are like, they live in a 400 square foot house and they've got two bowls and two forks and two plates, and it's super simple. Mm-hmm. There's less technology. They don't have a smart house where all of the technology is going to mess up, and they just live a simple life. They have a backpack and they, Yeah. And so that, I don't know that I think trying to, so with my kids, I'm trying to show them, you know, I'm building up a business. And so I'm trying to figure out, is there a way to build up the business to where I'm not putting us into a dangerous position financially? If everything were to fall apart, we had hurricanes where we live recently that wiped out a lot of our income, a lot of our business that we were getting was wiped out overnight. And had we taken on major debt in order to do that, we could be in a really rough position right now. And so, like, that is something I'm trying to find a bit of a balance in.
So risk versus...
A simple life.
Simple.
Yeah, a simple, quiet life.
What do you feel like you're trying to teach your sons by having that? You should take risks. You should also... do this other thing as well. What are those two things that appear to be in competition with each other?
Yeah, I think most people are wired. Maybe not everybody's wired this way, but to do something that's impactful, to your community or to your surroundings or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like for us, I want to build a place that is like, that we can help others build amazing memories. They, it's a beautiful land. We're building cabins on the land. Mm-hmm. I want to build a place. I'm as motivated by the income that we can get off of it and what it can be as far as a business that we sell and used for living as I am about imagining the people and their honeymoons and their retreats and their anniversaries and just their time away from their hectic lives. I want to create this incredibly peaceful place. And so part of me is, it's like my job is to build something that really gives people a place to go and find true rest from their very busy lives or whatever. And for it to be simple and calm and restful and things like that. And like, I'm very motivated by giving other people that. I'm trying to figure out how to answer that question.
So it sounds like you're creating the thing for other people that you're looking for yourself.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
Except just a moment for them. It's just a momentary, you know, cause they rent it for a week or a couple of days or whatever.
Ironically, we built this incredibly calm, restful cabin by a creek on 64 acres of land. Mm-hmm. And we've stayed in it one time for one night. My wife and I, one night, one time, in 2 years.
And I suppose if you stayed there now, you'd probably start working.
Probably so. Yeah, I'd find...
It would be...
Oh, this needs to be fixed. That needs to be fixed. Right. So, yeah, I know. That's a challenge.
Yeah.
I feel like... one of the things I'm looking for is the not distracted life, right? Like when I talk about simplicity in life, some of the best moments, if I think about my time with my family, some of the best moments I can think of are in the living room with a fire going in the wintertime. We all have our books that we're sitting reading. There's calm, quiet music playing. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some candles lit in the space. It's kind of dark. And we're all just peacefully learning and growing by the thing that we're reading, and maybe we'll stop and share an insight that we have while we're reading. Now that's a little bit, that's more of the dream, and it happens every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Every very long
did you do that with your own family, or did we you do that growing to, up?
No, I did not do that growing up. We were not a reading family.
Okay.
But we're trying, like, our kids like books a lot. And, but you know, we got two young boys, so that's not what they would normally be.
They wouldn't pick that as like their first choice to sit in a quiet room and read a book.
Right. It takes a little bit of work to get them to that spot. Mm-hmm. But my wife is really good at that. She's really good at saying, hey, we're going to have 30 minutes of reading, quiet reading time right now.
Name your third practice.
Yeah. And this is something that I've had seasons where I was really good at this. Mm-hmm. There's a book called The Artist's Way.
Okay.
Which is a fairly famous book and it's not just about painting art. I think the lady that wrote it is actually more of a writer. Like, she wrote novels and things like that. But her practice, which a lot of people use, and I've heard it mentioned in multiple books and multiple podcasts and things like that, is morning pages. And it's very specific. It's every single morning, the very first thing you do is you get up and you write 3 pages, handwritten, of stream of consciousness writing. And you just get it. Like, she says, usually it takes about a page and a half before the good stuff starts coming out. Because you might just be like, I don't know what to write about. I just got out of bed. I'm really tired. I don't know. But eventually you get to, I'm finding myself too distracted with this thing and that thing. And I really need to work on this, creative ideas come out or whatever it may be. I started doing that a while back, where I get up every morning and write those pages, and it's kind of exhausting handwriting three pages. I'm
not used to that anymore.
I know, it is really, but I found that like there's all this stuff that pops up out of the subconscious that you're realizing, like, oh, this is a weakness I have, and I almost didn't even know it. And then there's also like I will sometimes get up and I'll focus in on, I know there's this problem that I need to solve, and I'm going to just work on 3 pages of trying to solve this problem in writing, Or what was the other thing? It's like, this is something you asked me yesterday when we were having lunch. Like, what's the worst that could happen? Like, what's the, you know, like,
if spend you, three if, pages writing about that.
Yeah, if you were to do something, what's the worst that could happen? And, you know, I get sick to my stomach. I get real bent out of shape if, like, anything is off. So, like, if we have guests that had a problem at one of our properties, I'm like, oh, it's the end of the world. They hate us. They're going to give us horrible reviews. They're going to do, you know, all this thing. But then if I sit down and, like, really write through, like, oh, what's the worst that can happen? Okay, so they give us a bad review. I can respond and say, I'm so sorry that happened. Mm-hmm. We tried our best to alleviate it and fix it. We sent you $100. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Whatever the solution was, yeah.
And people read that and they say, oh, these people are conscious of the thing and they're trying their best not to let it happen again. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not that bad. Mm-hmm. You know, there's... So anyway, the writing, I feel like writing is a thing that will solve, it helps you to solve so much. It puts something into the physical world that you may be wrestling with internally. Mm. And so, in my mind, at least, maybe nobody else's mind works this way, but I feel like my mind is like, has things that are just swirling around it all the time. I'm thinking about financial challenges or spiritual questions or... oh, I need to go pick up the kids at 3 o'clock today, or, you know, whatever it may be, mm-hmm. that's just constantly floating around there, and putting words onto paper seems to somehow structure my brain to be able to all of a sudden, like, address it.
Mm, feel like it's not impossible or overwhelming.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. When I feel really, really overwhelmed writing these things down, all of a sudden I'll be like, oh wait, I only have 4 things to do. Mm. It feels like I've got 50 things. If I were to say, like, I need to write down everything that I've got to do today, oh man, it's like 50 things. And then I'm like, wait, I'm on number 4.
And I can't think of anything else. I can't
think of anything else. And I could probably get those things done in 30 minutes. Mm. And then I will have all of those stresses off my shoulders. Mm. You know, and all of a sudden it frees up your brain to not, you know. And I just say that because, like, it's something that I'm trying to do. I find myself writing a lot about... being an intentional husband to my wife and being an intentional father to my kids. Mm. Where I'm like, and I've, you know, like I remember not too long ago writing down, like, oh, what are 4 ways that I can show Lindsay love, from the very first hour of our morning that I just need to make a habit of. Okay. She likes decaf coffee in the mornings, not my regular coffee. So I can make her decaf coffee and it's ready to go when she wakes up in the morning. And she drinks these weird concoctions of, like, green blended stuff. And if I can learn that recipe, what she does, and have that ready for her. Because if I'm waking up early in the morning and I'm writing my morning pages and I'm praying and I'm spending some time just, like, figuring out my day, I've got time to do a little bit of that before she gets up and before the kids get up. And it helps bridge a gap between her and I from the very moment of the day, right? Mm-hmm. Well... those ideas of what I could do came from my morning realizing I had not been being very intentional with my wife and how that was like, oh, that's maybe a problem in our marriage. And so I'm hopeful that my kids will see me doing that and they will start developing habits of, like, intentionality in their own day. That, I'm overusing that word intentionality, but I feel like that's maybe, like, the problem is, like, it's really easy not to be in almost every area of our lives.
You know? I mean, I think for men, there's easy just to float, to let the day carry you. I mean, I remember when I was at my office job, my day consisted of my emails carrying me through the day. It was like, whatever email came in, that's what I was going to do next.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it. It's like, what am I going to do today? I'm just going to start my day by looking at my emails.
Yeah.
And then I'll just go down one at a time. And
you're reacting.
That's right. I'm just reacting. Yeah. That's right. And
most people walk through life, I feel like, reacting. I'm not sure most people do. A lot of people do.
Yeah. Certainly. I love that idea. That's really great. The 3 pages of handwritten writing, the first thing you do when you wake up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it will kind of turn into, like, almost a prayer journal.
Almost. Right.
Right. You can kind of kill 2 birds with 1 stone there, where it's just like,
Why not it be a prayer at the same time?
Yes. You know? Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Mm, that's really good. So you learned that from this book, The Artist's Way.
Yeah, which I...
So did you just read the book once and you're like, yeah, I'm going to do that?
I didn't read the whole book. It's...
You read enough.
Yes, it is a very intense book to a degree. I mean, it's like, you read chapter one and here's like eight things you need to do. And it's like kind of, it's a lot of work. I mean, it's a workbook. But that's the one that, like, that's the one thing I'm like, I can just do this, and it'll probably be helpful. And I've suggested to many friends who are like, I'm struggling to figure out what I'm going to do here. And like, are you writing about it every morning? Just keep writing about it, and eventually some solutions are going to come to the surface. And I believe that a lot more because I've seen that.
Do you have a notebook that you keep by your bed, or what is the way you do that?
I did have like just a spiral.
Yeah, just like a regular spiral notebook.
Which I'm not very disciplined to have like a consistent structure. That's one of my 2025.
Just to be more disciplined with how you do it?
I like the idea of having a journal for like every year. And that, like, I could look back on that and see where I was at 3 years ago, what I was writing about, you know. But I don't do that. I have found journals.
But maybe 2025 is the year.
Yeah, maybe that's the year. Today's day one of 2025.
You still have a chance.
So I need to go to the store today. I probably leave here and go to Barnes & Noble and go see what I can find.
No, that's good. I love that idea. I think that's fantastic.
It is more game-changing than you'll realize. When you start doing it consistently over time, it's kind of magical. I don't know what it is. It's magical in lots of ways.
I might try to do that.
Yeah.
This year.
Getting up, doing it early in the morning, before the people are up is really, it seems like a way to do it too.
I think that's what's been good for me. Cause you know, I've cared about fatherhood, but I've learned a lot of things from other dads. I would have never thought to do that.
Yeah.
And for the good of my family, you know, and this idea has been really impactful to me. And it's the idea that Ray Ortlund talks about in his book up there, to the 10th generation, but that I heard actually before coming across that book. And it's the idea of generational impact. And it goes something like this. If you want to know the numbers, for me, I have six children. And if all my children and all their descendants have, on average, three children in 10 generations, that would be 59,048 people. 59,048 people in 10 generations. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's just me and my wife. And so 10 generations is approximately 200 to 250 years. So the idea that we do pass things down to our kids, who pass them down to their kids, who pass them down to their kids, that when we make choices and make changes in our life, when we point them towards the right things, the good things in life, that has an impact, not just for our two kids or our six kids, but for their kids and their children's children and their children's children's children, that there will be an impact no matter whether we want it there to be one or not. And so I think this idea has been very impactful about like what we do does matter in a much, what I don't want to say global, because global is not the right word. That's like geography, temporal. In a temporal way, it certainly matters over time what we choose to do or not do.
Yeah.
And I think that's good for men, fathers, especially myself, to acknowledge that on a regular basis, that this isn't something I can choose to not have an impact in. I will have an impact. In some way, in some form, even if I choose to leave my family, that itself would have an impact on my family.
Yeah.
So I can't escape it. And I think that helps to put into perspective the choices we make in our own lives today aren't just about ourselves.
Yeah.
In fact, if anything, they're hardly about ourselves.
Hardly about ourselves, yeah.
You know, if you put yourself as one of the 59,048 people. So that's been a powerful idea to me to just think about. And if I was going to be a great, 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 great grandchild, what would I have hoped that my great, 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 great granddad would have spent his time doing and focusing on and working towards and loving and, you know, spending his time doing and all those kinds of things. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
So,
that's good stuff.
And with that, thank you so much for meeting Aaron. Yeah,
this has been great, man. Thank you so much for having me. This was a fun conversation.
Fun conversation. Yeah. Thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
Peace. Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.